Stupid Hearts Club is yours to enjoy for free wherever you get your podcasts. But if you've fallen deeply in love with the show, or me, even though that's a bit weird because we've never met, then you might want to consider supporting the show via patreon.com/Stupid Hearts Club. For about £5 a month, you can indulge in your sick little fantasy that I am your very own little audio husband friend, without ever having to deal with the fact that in real life I leave socks and half-drunk glasses of water everywhere. Either way, I'm very happy you're here, so please enjoy the show.
Big Balls here tonight, real talk dynamite. Thanks for listening, it's good to be together. Stupid Hearts Club forever. Let's look inside our minds.
Welcome to Stupid Hearts Club, with this week's guest, making his debut, the very, very fine and funny, Mr. Josh Pugh. Oh, yes. It is very exciting this week, because I've got a brand new guest, and I feel as if I don't treat you to enough of those. A while back I worked on a show for ITV2 that'll be coming out soon that we mention in this episode. And I worked with a load of different writers and who were all good fun. And the person that made me laugh pretty much the most, they were all funny, but this guy made me laugh the most and thought, yes, you, sir, are a bit of me, was Josh Pugh. P-U-G-H. I don't know why I feel the need to spell that out, a bit insulting to him really, as if it needs spelling because he's not really thought through, he's not thought about us when he's chosen a surname, as if you even get to choose. And how dare I, when my name's Tatarovich. So anyway, Josh Pugh, very funny man. He does give his details at the end, but I might as well tell you now that he goes under the name Josh Pugh Comic on various platforms, but I know him on Instagram. And the reason I messaged him and said, come on, Josh, let's have a chat, is because I have got a bit of a talent crush on him, I would say, actually, because his videos on Instagram are really making me giggle. So I thought I would play you a little bit of that so you can see why I'm in love with him. He kind of does a bit of a character. I mean, he does himself as a stand-up, and he writes for people and all that. But he's been doing these videos, and they're very, very funny, where he's making a phone call and it's a man tying himself in knots, what he describes later on as being on the back foot. Here's a bit of that. It's very funny.
Can't believe Greg's dead. I'm gutted. Yeah, I'm properly gutted. Knew him really well. Oh, I used to go to school with him, I'm proper gutted. Oh yeah, I know his family, I know his mum as well, so I'm properly cut up. Sandra, yeah, I'm gutted for her as well. I used to go around there, I used to play around there, used to let me stay over. Yeah, I was there on Christmas Day once, so I'm properly gutted for everyone. Yeah, I used to go on family holidays with them, so I'm properly gutted, really gutted. I was shagging him. Yeah, well, I was shagging him as well, and I was shagging his whole family, so I'm properly gutted for everybody. You going to the funeral? Nah, I'm working. Yeah, me too.
Very, very funny. As is this one, which is called Steel Pan Man.
Oh, hello, you don't know me, but I am a Caribbean gentleman in my early 60s, and I'd like to come into your primary school to teach the steel pans to your almost exclusively white cohort. Steel pans. It's like an instrument from the Caribbean. No, no, I bring them all in. Well, you've got two options, really. They can't practice in between sessions. What it is, I bring them in, And then I'll take them away immediately after, so they can't practice in between. Option two, you can purchase around 20 steel pounds at huge expense to the school, and then just store them somewhere. So your call, really, on that. So what it would be, it'd be a very small selection of the students, just almost selected at random, and that they'd get it. So just clear a classroom for me. It'd be in the main bit, so the rest of the school can hear the session going on. I don't know where you'd get them from, actually. I don't even know. I've never seen. I don't know how I got these. These are just given to me. I don't know where you'd get them from, to be honest. Well, there's some, tuneful ones at the front for the bright kids, and then I've just got some, big oil drums that the slower kids can just bang on at the back. So there's something for everybody, really. Yeah. No, just tell the kids to bring cash on the day.
Absolutely brilliant. And, actually achieved taking me right back to Parswood High School in East Didsbury in Manchester, because that definitely happened, as it did to all of us. I bow to you, Josh Pugh. And now I introduce our conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy about an hour and 15-ish minutes of chat with Mr. Josh Pugh that runs into a little bit of audio trouble later on, which I hope I've mainly sorted out. But there is some wonky stuff. Please bear with it. It'll be worth it. He's a lovely lad. Enjoy the conversation.
How's it? I've changed to the internal mic. Will that do anything?
It has done something. Oh, hello.
Is this it?
Yeah.
Oh, I've mate. Done it. Yeah. I mean, I only had two options and I just selected the other option and it seems to have done the trick.
Superb. Like data services, fucking brilliant. It does happen, you know. You like you phone people up, and with the best intentions, you never know whether something in the electrical mystery realm is gonna fuck up your attempt.
Yeah, I did. I listened to Parents in Hell, and they had Connor Benn on, who's like a boxer.
Yeah,
and you could just tell his feed wasn't right, but you could just tell everybody was too scared to put him up on it. They're just like, okay, we'll just crack on with it
in case he punches us in the face.
yeah, agreed.
Is he Nigel Benson?
He is Nigel Benson. Yeah, he failed a drugs test about 2 weeks ago. He's supposed to have a big fight against Chris Eubank's son.
That's right. Yeah,
but so, yeah,
I have not been following it. Right, so like when I was young. When boxing was on normal telly and the pubs would be full, the years where it was Ben Eubanks Collins were fucking huge.
Yeah, I bet.
And they were like proper grudge, dirty grudge. It was like a soap opera. So I didn't even know that they were fighting each other, and then I didn't know that the fight didn't happen.
Yeah.
How badly? In what way did he fail a drugs test? Do we know?
It was women's. Fertility drugs.
Right.
I don't know how that's helping your boxer, but I think it's more of a blocker to stop people detecting something in your system.
Oh, that's silly.
I think that's how a lot of people get caught, I think. So there's loads of memes going around with kind of him with a big pregnant belly and massive boobs.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of it, but that's funny. A strange one, right? So he's been on the Pregnacare, basically.
Yeah, basically, he's kind of... I don't know how that works, but, I mean, even at that point, I'd be suspicious. I'd be like, is this a wind-up? You know, people are saying, like, put... I think it's like an oestrogen supplement to kind of level out all the testosterone he's maybe had previously. I don't really get it.
But you've got to ask yourself, are you ready for a fight if you start going on Google going, what if I...
Yeah,
I'm not saying I can't beat him, but what if I just see if it works? Just have far too much testosterone, because I've seen this thing where if I act like I'm a pregnant woman after that, it'll balance it out. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't. That I'm not scared of him hitting me. I'm just saying.
My head.
You go down that wormhole, I think just fucking give it a miss.
Yeah, just say you're ill. Just say you got COVID or something, rather than pump it into you. That's been a great excuse, hasn't it, for the last 2 years. Just I've got symptoms.
And you only need You only need one photo of a COVID test.
Oh, and that sees you through.
Yeah. That a flow.
Yeah. I remember when you start going to events, it started off, you need a passport, and then you needed a picture of a COVID test, and then it was register a COVID test, and then people were taking actual COVID, like the little tests into the...
Yeah.
And then by the end of it, it was just like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, everybody just come in, whatever.
Yeah.
It was mad.
Yeah, it was... It's a strange thing. It's going to take a long time to process all that shit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's... So my best mate's got two little kids. They're like 6 and 8. And some of their earliest memories would be the pandemic stuff. Either being homeschooled or the mum and dad's walking around in masks. It's going to be... they're probably not old enough to remember how it was before, where you would just... I mean, it feels pretty normal now, but it's hard to know the effect it's had on us, really.
Yeah, I think it's pretty serious in a way. Not like everyone's got to get on with it, but it's affected a lot of people's vision of what they do, what there is out there, how we operate, what they want to do, whether they still do it, whether they feel a bit agoraphobic.
Yeah, totally.
All of that. I think it's very hard to measure it, but I think
also how it was kind of handled by the government and stuff. Well, that all affect. That will affect people's parenting and affect people's trust of authority. And it's probably the first time teachers are saying one thing and parents are saying another thing, and then the TV's saying another thing. For a kid, I bet that's just...
Yeah.
Because as a kid, you just think, oh, adults know. And the first time they've probably seen adults actually are unsure, they don't know. It must be...
Or they don't agree.
Yeah, they don't agree, or they're going along with something, or they're under... You know, they're you see your parents breaking the law because they don't believe in it.
Yeah, right.
And what
yeah.
that translates to, it's it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
My little brother sailed through his. He had GCSEs. Didn't do his GCSEs.
Right.
And then he had to do his A levels, but only a bit of it.
Right.
So he's sailed through to uni. Nobody knows if he can do it or not. So he's going to find out now.
Yeah. Find out when he's on the trading floor of a major bank.
Yeah.
He can't, but when you think about it, I was going to say that, like, and then he crashes the economy as a joke, but the actual Prime Minister and the actual Chancellor have just done that.
Oh, it's...
So how fucking, you know, where's how do you measure who's clever now?
Yeah, who could... I can't... Anyone... You know, people say, oh, I could do that job.
Yeah.
It's getting to the point where I don't think I could have done much worse than they've just done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, seriously, how are you... Like, what's the point of having a class structure, an elite system, if the people that get to do that job are completely fucking useless?
Well, yeah. Look, I always... That's kind of my argument for it. It's kind of... people say that all the prime ministers are from the same school. I'm like, yeah, that's not the end of the world if that school is good and is getting results. Like, I wouldn't want anybody from my school doing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the same...
I'm trying to think who from our school. There's one lad.
Yeah, but
a lad called Garfield Kiff.
Oh, I'd vote for him. He's got my vote.
Who, right, a heady mix this. Garfield Kiff. I think he ended up writing... He is clever. He ended up writing for The Guardian and stuff like that at some point. I'm sure I saw his name around. So he will know his politics, but I didn't know that was coming at the age of 12.
Yeah.
He was a midfield general in the school football team, but he was a well-spoken lad, because, you know, Manchester's Manchester, but you still got the odd middle-class kid, not many.
Yeah.
But he could play, like, the violin play football, and he always, very sensibly, had a handkerchief. So,
oh, what a
you know,
gent.
Quite a bit of a gentleman as well. But he got on with everyone, never got in any grief. And if it was Goonies, we'd all stop and listen to him while he held the torch.
Yeah. He's an officer, isn't he? If we're all conscripted to war tomorrow, he's an officer, isn't he? Instantly.
Yeah.
It's because he used to.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah. Was it World War II or World War I? They used to called PAL regiments. So you'd join with your football team or your cricket team or a group of friends would join up.
Mm.
And some people from a young age, they are kind of natural. They have a natural authority, don't they, people?
Yeah.
I think that's something I've never had, but I kind of find
trust is an interesting idea, isn't it? I mean, you know, like without being glib about it, the naivety, what it sounds like, you know, whenever we talk about, you know, when it'll be soon as well, won't it? When it be like Poppy Day and all that, Remembrance Sunday.
Yeah.
And we talk about the service and the bravery and all that quite rightly, because it's just unfathomable what like grandparents' generation had to do. But it's also the sort of cheery willingness that they did it with. And I think part of that was the sort of more deferential society they lived in meant that duty and carrying out orders and someone who knows what they're doing telling you what to do and you just doing it.
Yeah.
That was just completely different from now, wasn't it?
And I think, yeah, totally. And also, I think back then everything's a face-to-face service, isn't it? So you kind of, you know, if you're getting money out, you go to the post office, or if you kind of queue and you get, and it's kind of, it's not just a face, you know, it's kind of, you're used to dealing with people and trusting people and taking people at the, but having said that, I'm sure those people, you know what we just said about the lockdowns and stuff, I'm sure those people are like, oh, this, I bet there was conspiracy theorists and people who could kind of see through stuff and were a bit more informed, maybe. I mean, I don't know how they would have been.
Yeah,
without,
it'd be different, wouldn't it? It wouldn't be like, I don't know, in Britain, it's hard to imagine the same weird debates going on because I think people just sort of, obviously they talked in the pub, didn't they, then? That was social media. So
yeah.
I just think you had people who were forthright saying they've, you know, stating their sort of opinion while holding the lapels of the jacket. And then there'd be someone else going, I think they're all bloody daft as each other. And that was probably about as intense as those arguments would get.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what my, you know, say if I was around then, you know, late 1930s and social media existed, I wonder what my friends would be posting and stuff. I wonder if they'd be gung-ho, I wonder if they'd be conscientious objectors, or, you know, it'd be interesting to...
Hashtag Mosley.
Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah.
It's,
Well, it, you know, and like, I don't know what year this is. When was the Chartists? When was that? Let's have a look.
I don't know.
Do you remember, like, this is all like, you know, there's like buildings in Soho. I mean, Karl Marx was writing in Soho, wasn't he, at one point?
Yeah.
And there'd be, like, basically, there used to be meetings above pubs, didn't there?
Yeah.
When was, I'm going to have a look. I don't even know who the Chartists are, so I'm just going to, the Chartists were, the Chartist movement was the first mass movement, and this is deep stuff straight from Wikipedia, was the first mass movement driven by the working classes. It grew following the failure of the 1832 Reform Act to extend the vote, ... of whatever it says on that page that I've not yet clicked on. So, like,
yeah.
It's not like
that paywall.
Yeah, it's not like this is the first generation to have, like, weird little break-off fucking political views. And obviously the 30s was absolutely fucking jumping with strange little political, like communism and Nazism and all that, like, all over Europe. It, that was pulling people in the same way that you get, like, Tommy Robinson supporters and all that, like, now, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. But, and especially then, if you've got a bit of charisma and can talk with a bit of, you know, if you've got a bit of star quality, it used to send you a long way, didn't it?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's very nice. Are you saying I could have pulled some numbers in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know what your agenda is, but if you can charm and look at Thomas Shelby, who knows what he's
Well, exactly. It's
for.
There's your blueprint. And I'd say me, again, no agenda, softer edges than Mosley. But
yeah.
I do look good in a black shirt. But were they the black shirts or the brown shirts? I can't remember which country was which. Who had brown shirts?
I don't know.
I think the black shirts was Mosley.
Yeah, it was actually. That's correct.
Which is annoying because it's a good choice of a shirt colour.
Slimming as well. Do you know what I mean? If I was going to...
Slimming. But a good choice of shirt colour, but nefariously misused. The bastards. I'm always very impressed when... Have you ever seen the footage of what's known as the Cable Street Riots?
No.
Which is when the sort of fascists decided to march and it was like all round... Bow and sort of Bethnal Green and all that sort. I think it's the Bow Road. So, you know, them slightly sped up bits of footage of people when there's like people protesting in the street,
yeah.
but they look like they're doing a comedy walk.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's that, but there's a massive fight, basically. And that that was people from, you know, the fucking 20s and 30s fucking attacking people in the street for being fascists.
Yeah.
And it always makes me think, you just assume, because old people are generally racist, you sort of just assume that people wouldn't necessarily cared if people were fascists. Because they all are now, but it turns out that you know, I don't think you had touchy feely liberalism, certainly not about race and religions, and I don't quite understand it, but you know, people knew that there was something fucking sinister about it. Maybe like from what they were reading about.
Yeah,
it's hard to try and get your head around. What was the average British person thinking about Hitler before? You know, like after the war, you can go, Jesus Christ, there was like the deportation of the Jews. And, you know, obviously they could have been looking at him like we're looking at Putin, going, you don't take over another country. That's definitely bullying. Let's not like him.
Yeah.
But in terms of knowing that the rise of fascism or Nazism or communism were scary, unstable versions of the sort of gentle life we've got here, it's hard to get your head around
and
that.
And I'm sure there's kind of like a bit of like fatigue and kind of being so exhausted and things from World War One.
Well, that'll be it. Yeah, it just kind of probably the answer.
Yeah, it's kind of we can't really deal with any more of this, and kind of it's the last thing you want to be reading, isn't it? You know, you just kind of come through that, and you know, people have come home and you've seen the kind of the state they're in, and then this is brewing up again. And
it's now
it's your kids who will be sent off. You must think, oh.
Basically the idea that something's brewing again that is making people want to mobilise against an ideology. It's like sort almost like whatever it is, it can fuck off.
Yeah, agreed.
We've had it up to here with.
If we had bird flu now, people would be like, oh, not engaging in it.
Well, I mean, look at Russia. I mean, this is a very interesting moment, and we don't exactly know what's real and what's not real and what is, you know, obviously the Western media has to put out a message at the moment that we hope makes it over there so that all the people being asked to join up for Putin, you know, what the ideal scenario is that everyone starts refusing to fight and then starts a sort of, not necessarily call it a full revolution, but certainly the idea that, you know, it's not as straightforward as everyone being just fucking up for it.
Yeah, there's actually no way of gauging kind of public opinion without being in a place for with anything. That's with anything, isn't it? You see it, you know, you can kind of...
Especially in a country where you will get thrown away and worse for speaking out.
Yeah, totally, and where maybe, you know, the social media opinions of, you know, more liberal people aren't as easy to come by. And yeah, it's mad. There's something so interesting about kind of Russia, isn't there? Even, you know, take this out of it. There's something just how kind of just the culture of the place, and it's a very interesting place, isn't it? Before, you know, take all this out of it, before this, and you know,
just the level of what from the outside and from a Western perspective.
Yeah.
Caveat. The sort of masculine culture there seems really fucking dangerous and very, very widespread, doesn't it? So, like, the fact that it's illegal to be gay and you will get battered and whatever else, probably, you know, like, there's homophobia in a lot of places. But Russia sort of looks like, because it's, you think of it as a big European country with, like, you know, a fucking massively impressive history and culture and art and literature and whatever, you'd think... throughout history, throughout the other bits of Europe, you kind of think sort of Western thinking has sort of made it quite far across that world, but there's definitely a difference, isn't there?
It feels a bit, but it just geographically, it's so massive as well. Anything like America can be, you know, such a variety of ways of living, you know, within one country. We're such a tiny island, you can kind of, the difference between somebody living in London and somebody living in Hartlepool it can only be.
Well, I think it's London's the one that's different, and everywhere else is very, is quite similar, really.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. You know,
just sort of Umbro trainers and then pizzas that you get that are already made.
Chicago time. And, but even within Russia, you've kind of got mountainous bits, you've got almost inhabitable bits, you've got kind of bits that are near China, bits that are, it's just
and the, you know, I didn't know this until I did, which is the same as how you receive any information if you think about it. But my name Tatarevich is from the Tatars, and Tatarstan right now is a republic right in the middle of all this shit, Crimea, Georgia, all that. The Tatars are a people, as in like the Kurds or whoever.
Yeah.
And the Tatars are a moderate sort of, it's kind of that bit of the world that, you know, it toggles between sort of Russia, Turkish, ethnic Chinese,
yeah.
and it's actually an Islamic culture.
Wow.
And you sort of, we know that's there because when there was all like Chechnya and Chechen stuff and all that, you see some of the divisions that we don't, you know, you don't think of as Russians, you just think of what we've seen in Cold War and war films. But yeah, Russia's probably quite complex.
Yeah.
And maybe, I don't know, I have no fucking idea what I'm talking about, but maybe that, you know, that complexity might actually help.
I'm certain geography plays a part in the culture of a country, almost certainly. We're almost certainly, as Brits, the way we are to some extent, because we're an island. Almost certainly.
Yeah.
I think landlocked countries must... There's something in it, isn't there? Well, you know, it's hundreds and hundreds of years of stuff.
The blend is more like the marinating of different cultures has gone on, goes further back, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. You know, if you're a landlocked country where people are passing through your country, or if you're an island where you're kind of historically a bit vulnerable, or a bit kind of, it's just it's dead interesting.
It's a scary time at the moment. You know.
Oh yeah.
I went to a music and poetry night the other week on a Friday night in East London, and my friend Vera, who's an actress, Vera Graziade, I never get her name right, and that's her married name, so that her real name is she's actually Ukrainian, and so she put this night on to raise some money for Ukraine, and some various Ukrainian sort of artists got up and did stuff. And it was kind of like the little bit where they spoke beforehand, and then they were relaying stuff about people they knew or talking about family or whatever. Fucking hell, you could have heard a pin drop, you know what I mean? It was like heavy. And then they'd do, you know, a bit of music or a bit of poetry or whatever, and that was like really interesting. But like Vera, she was describing, she went and met her mum, and they are sort of ethnically Russian but Ukrainian. And when all this shit started, they felt like the Western media was making it all look one-sided. And that from their point of view, Ukrainians were terrorising local Russian people.
Wow.
But, and I thought she's, you know, I wonder how she's managing the fact that we don't have the complexity of understanding about that side of it. Anyway, I saw her the other day and she was like, no, my politics is completely changed this time.
Wow.
Because it is just so... You know, it isn't complex this time. It is literally, actually, we've all been trying to get on since then. And now this guy's come along and just said, right, I'll take everything. And I think that's where that thing is, where everyone was, you know, if you read certain articles or whatever, it seems to be that he expected to be welcomed with open arms, a bit like, I don't know.
You know, that I wonder how much of that is just as well, you know, like in... Like all villains have a backstory, don't they? I wonder, you know, if it's...
Like Doc Ock from Spider-Man.
Yeah. I wonder if something, you know, if his family were treated a certain way, or if he was treated a certain way. And
yeah, I mean, there's always...
You know, it's always laced with a person's personal experience, isn't it? It's, you know, whether it's a conscious or unconscious bias. You're
letting him off the hook then.
totally. I'm trying to
give him. Can I tell you something funny? Do you know what my mum said this week? I just spent one night at my mum's. No, two nights And I was out on Saturday, but yesterday we had the whole day together yesterday, and there's got to be a dozen times where I'm surreptitiously typing into WhatsApp what she's saying to remember it. She said, "Oh, I used to fancy Putin, but I've gone off him a bit."
A bit.
And that's exactly what I said. Yeah, a bit. I said, "Mummy, he's threatening to blow up the entire world." And she went, I know. That's why I've gone off him.
Yeah, invading a neighbouring country's your mum's ick.
Done.
Yeah.
Don't yuck anyone's yum, but I'm not having that. She said, "I'm done with narcissists."
Yeah, Putin's giving her the ick.
But I was going to laugh a few minutes back there. I was listening to us reaching. Basically, what's happened here is we've immediately gone down a bit of a cul-de-sac that's almost a bit Newsnight-esque.
Yeah, but without any of the reading.
Yeah, exactly. I'm guessing both of us had, and this is not a judgment at all, I'm guessing, did you have quite a normal sort of working class comprehensive education?
Yeah, well, there's only one school you can go to where I live, so everybody just went there.
I'm not saying you can tell, I'm just saying. I could feel both of us going, fucking hell, like, really, like, because I joked about Wikipedia then, and then I was regretting shutting that page immediately.
Yeah, totally, but at the same time...
trying to back it up.
Yeah, but I think sometimes comes with that working class education is that you know that you don't know, and you kind of, you're not speaking with an authority on stuff, it's you trying to, you know, we're kind of presented the information as...
within the parameters of the sort of primary colour words that we know.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, yeah. But yeah.
In Manchester, in a moment like that, if you can't reach for the vocabulary to express something sort of quite complex, you just go, "It's fucking right, all."
Yeah. Oh, it's fucking mad, isn't it? All that.
Yeah, it's fucking mad, though, isn't it?
Is that where you're from, Nico? Yeah, you. Grew up in Manchester. Yeah.
It was very nice this weekend. I actually went back up. I've had a very interesting weekend, actually, because I've spent a lot of time on my own in this weird little village in Bedford, and I've made a big promise to myself after pandemic and after recovering, we'll come on to that later, but after recovering from having a bit real fucking head wobble that made me not well a few months ago, I've been like right back on form, and I'm making sure I'm going off and doing things and seeing places. Nice. It's just really fucking helping fire me up again. So this weekend I went back up to Manchester to raise a glass with some very good mates over a friend of mine that passed away a few months ago. And we met in the pub that we used to drink in. It happens also to be the pub that my mum ran with my stepdad. So like 10 years of my life, we're living in a... you wouldn't even call it a rough pub, but then you look back at how that area's changed and what that... even just what that pub's like now and what the culture of that pub was then. And you look back and you go, actually, it was rough.
Yeah.
It was basically like the Sopranos, you know, but with Manchester accents.
Yeah.
And it was that part, you know, that bunch of people, you know, it was fucking villains, armed robbers, grafters and whatever, but just amongst working people and normal people. So like, not everyone was like, it wasn't like an estate pub.
Yeah.
But, you know, through round the shape of the pub, which is like, if you think of it as a horseshoe sort of shaped pub.
Yeah, bar in the middle.
Well, yeah, bar sort of like, you know, round. Not, it wasn't literally round like a horseshoe, but like whatever, a staple or a goalpost. The three different sections of the pub had sort of different crowds in them. And... you know, there was some pretty rum characters and some rum shit went down and over the years. And I went back there, and now there's actually like a B&B. Like, you can stay the night and the rooms are really nice. And it's like, you know, Habitat lamps and, you know.
Yeah. And is it got a different name now? Because I think pubs, even if the names change, the name that is most infamous is the one the locals still use, isn't it?
Yeah. Actually, I still got the same name.
Yeah.
The only thing that's changed is it was always called the Bowling Green Hotel, but it wasn't a hotel. It was just a pub. Maybe it had been a hotel in its day at some point. You know, like go back to the Peaky Blinders reference, and imagine where there was like rooms above a pub, and you know, was gonna sleep on a rope for a tuppence.
Yeah.
And maybe there was then, But we were just a family boozer, really. No food. It was a wet pub. We had a bowling team, a darts team, a football team. But other than the odd raffle on a Sunday, you'd have a thing called a tote.
Yeah.
Everyone chuck a fucking ticket in and someone pulls out the numbers and reads it out on a microphone type of stuff.
Yeah.
There wasn't sort of stuff going on that was, like now where it's like, hey, we do, you know, there's like a mindfulness evening or like knitting club or whatever and like nice food and all that. Like, it just wasn't part of it, you know. It was fucking nuts, crisps and drinks and fighting.
Yeah, there's a lot of pubs near, so the town I live, my mum's always worked behind bars. So she's and as
watching
a kid,
prison.
Yeah, she tried to. So as a kid, I'd go in, like pop in, and I could put my head round and see her. And yeah, it's mad how the pub culture was. It used to be real. I don't know what it was. It would have been like mid 90s.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
the first time, like as a real small kid, I would have been going in. Mm. And there's definitely a threat of. It was a much more violent place generally. Mm. I think I don't know if the area or. Britain generally,
in a way, it's sort of like what was
well, the road thing was.
Yeah, sorry, go on. Where was this?
No, just saying, kind of, it's just kind of. So I live in a small town, like a market town near Coventry, and then Coventry always had a bad reputation.
Mm.
And it was just quite, and obviously there was a lot of football violence in the late '80s, and
it was
a really strange. And I think it's much nicer now. Everywhere seems much. I don't know if it's because I'm now an adult or whatever. I do feel quite safe in most places, really.
That's an interesting observation. I was talking to one of my friends who I was out with on the Friday where we were catching up, remembering what it was like. And that area now is Chorlton in Manchester is now effectively like...
Yeah, it's nice, Chorlton.
It's got a sort of very trendy thing going on. It's grown into it big time, and now that's what it is. It's changed a lot. And there are still some of the old locals from our pub. They all drink round the corner in another pub because our old pub isn't that pub anymore. So you can still find them people. And it's not like, I don't think, it's not with all of them, it's not like bitterly divided between the posh lot and them. But actually, it's an uneasy truce because back then, and right, I want to write about this. I'm working on a treatment at the moment to write about those days. The first bar opened up that was like part of that new world, and it was like the police station shut down and moved. And then suddenly this police station's been sold and it opened as like the first sort of cool bar. I think it was called the Lead Station. And anyway, it was people were genuinely absolutely baffled as to what the fuck was going on. And it was like the first place that had like Stara Pramen, and there was like
totally
cool posters on the wall for like New Order and maybe something a bit sort of Eastern European on the wall, and it didn't have a carpet, and there was nothing wrong with it, and some people realised quite quickly, like the thing that made it not just get firebombed is that people were by then, you know, you're going on holiday and you're drinking in bars. And go and having interesting beer, and then coming home and going, bars, not pubs. Bars and pubs are two different things. So it's like there's a bar, not a pub.
Totally.
But at the same time, you know, anyone who is a self-respecting sort of, you didn't have hipsters then, but I guess the word bohemian got used. A few people would, you know, basically students who have stayed in Manchester and a postgraduate and whatever, they'll immediately like be drawn to a place like that. And then the people who are from our world, normal pub world, like I say our world, like my family, you thought of them as other already. So like when the people that you think are them people come in our pub and they, I always was like, here we go, you know, sort of there was a certain quality of thick woolly jumper, basically Smiths fans, if you like.
Yeah.
There was a certain quality of thick woolly jumper. And I would nudge whoever I was behind the bar with and go, Worthington or Guinness. And this person would come to the bar, maybe with a book under their arm, and go, yeah, I could have a pint of Worthington's. And I'd sort of, I didn't have a problem with the person, but I thought they were a type already. And my observation, wrongly,
yeah,
but, you know, it's like my young mind sort of trying to figure out who's who, is that lads drank lager.
Yeah.
Old men drank bitter. If a young person's ordering bitter, it's because they think they appreciate ale on some sort of hearty, intellectual...
yeah.
You know, like, there was like some... They were on some sort of journey to appreciate... Go on.
Or it was a deliberate choice not to be a lad. It was a statement.
Yeah, exactly that, right? Yeah,
I'm not
like,
that kind of person.
Yeah. Very, and then, but then what was... I'm glad this happened, actually. Around that time was the first time Paul Carf came out, Steve Coogan doing Paul Carf. And Steve Coogan very clearly understood the working class well enough to do Paul Carf's family brilliantly. And he had him all chip on his shoulder about like the corner house cinema and all that, and trying to impress a girl. And his mate, who was a grown-up student, was trying to teach him what to say to this girl who was a bit sophisticated. But his mate was sophisticated, and that was Patrick Marber, who ended up being a playwright and whatever. So what was brilliant about that was, as a working class lad getting into comedy but still living in that area, there was comedy coming from a working class person, but already saying there's a discomfort here that needs exploring.
Yeah, totally.
And I could see very quickly, because then like the day-to-day sort of happened and stuff like that.
Have you ever read A Starter for Ten, Nico?
Well, who's that by?
I think it's David Nichols. It's about a guy from like a seaside town. He leaves his mates back home to go to uni in Bristol.
Right.
And it's exactly what you're describing. It's kind of...
Is it a novel?
It's a novel, and it was a film. I think, what's his name? James McAvoy's in the film. He plays a character in the film. And it's, it's exactly this. It's kind of like, and then the girl, I remember kind of being kind of a young guy like that in the town. Mm. And then, then the first thing you meet, like a girl that's like different to the girls from where you live. Like they're dressed a bit differently.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They've got a bit of a... Like that they've got different interests and different, a bit more not clued into the world, but they're, you know, if you'd ask somebody, a girl to school with in age 16, what's feminism, they just wouldn't have a clue what, they just wouldn't know what it means or what it is, or even what the word meant. And then the first time you meet these different people, it's like, oh, it's mind blowing.
Book people, it's basically book people.
It's book people, yeah, book people, not TV people.
They did piano lessons and recorder, and their parents made them, you know, made them comfortable around books. And I'll tell you now, I was blushing the first... I didn't go in a bookshop, really, like, from the introduction into that world. I met a few mates and that who were reading, oh, have you read that? No, but, you know, I know I'm allowed to, but, like, I was... My face was hot in a bookshop, And I reckon I started going in there, but with a hot face, age 25. And it took me till about 30-odd to... And then I caught myself going, oh, look at this. You're not looking round wondering whether anyone knows you shouldn't really be in here. It took me fucking years.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was absolutely...
But that's you.
Blown away by what I was reading. Yeah. But then you'd put that on the shelf and then think, oh, look at my one book.
Yeah, but it's like years. Everyone's out of place somewhere. That's like the guys going into the pub, isn't it, and ordering you know, with a book, going into your pub with a book under their arm, and that can kind of present itself in different ways, and people can kind of either be kind of on the defensive with other people that aren't the same as them, or they can be kind of standoffish. It all comes from a bit of, everyone's a bit insecure in a different environments, aren't they?
But why are you crying now? Do you feel?
Oh yeah, I'm in my own home.
Because you sound a bit trembly.
It's a real.
I was going to say something. I don't think I know you well enough to be like taking the piss out of each other yet. But I know you can take it, and you're a good lad. But I was nearly going to say before the moment's gone really. But when we were right down the communism thing a few minutes, I was going to wait till the most serious moment and just go, I thought you'd be funnier than this, to be honest.
I actually nearly stopped at one point and said, is this a comedy thing?
Right. I just have to say, And I will have done a setup, by the way. So by the time your voice comes on when I put the episode up, I'll probably do a little intro. And I think that's how I'm going to... You know, I said to you before, I'm going to play in some of the videos you've been putting up on Instagram, like where you sort of do... someone sort of thinking as they speak on the phone quite a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Often, I don't know whether it's the same character or not, you can explain it in a sec, but it's like you're sort of tripping over yourself, trying to give an impression of a certain thing that's going on in your head, but what you're saying is giving you away, and you're very, very, very good at it.
Yeah,
it's fucking...
It's kind of like... It's just kind of on the back foot, any of the guy. It's just kind of on the back foot.
Did you just come up with that as a concept? Like,
I think it's just a lockdown thing. I just kind of did... I did one video in lockdown. I didn't kind of... With anything like this, if you try and set out to, I'm going to do some videos that's going to build an audience, you'd never do it. You kind of have to happen upon these things just out of wanting to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I've set myself a challenge. I'm doing one a year. That's a good Should we have to produce
my kind of numbers? Yeah,
50 seconds of content every 365 days. That should be doable. One a week for a year. And just see what happens. It's just a bit of a way to be creative, you know.
They're fucking great, man.
Yeah, they've served me well, actually. People kind of I get recognised actually in the street sometimes from them. But it's never...
All right, we don't need to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's never.
Josh, can you do your shirt up? Have you got? Yeah,
it's never.
Your medallion's clinking on the microphone, but no, that's. How many? What, have you got a lot of followers on Instagram?
Not so much on Instagram. I've got a few on Instagram, but it's more Twitter, really. I think Twitter's more.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't cracked Instagram, really.
But do TikTok?
Nah, I've downloaded it a few times, Nick. Have you been on there?
I feel like I don't want to be part of that awful sort of micro attention culture.
No.
But it also feels like... I don't know. It's like... It feels like... A very sort of happening place, doesn't it?
I don't know. I don't think that's where it's at. I don't think that's where it's at. I think...
Right. You're younger than me, so you can tell me.
Well, I downloaded it twice. First time I downloaded it, I went on it. The first video was dance if you're on your period, and then a woman dancing. And then I swiped down, and then the second was just like 10 schoolgirls coming out of a toilet cubicle. I was like, why is this the first two things you've given me? What have I done? What have I pressed to get this? So no, I can't get with it, mate. Can't get TikTok.
It's not just me.
Don't really understand it, mate, to be honest.
Am I allowed to ask what your age is?
I'm 33.
33. So you've got 15 years on me. That's upsetting.
So you're approaching 50. Okay.
Hey, come on.
How does that feel, mate? Because I always think, well, every age has felt the same to me so far. Do you think that's just the same forever?
Did you have any, like, going up to 30 or like 27 is quite famously a wobble?
I think, you know what, I used to get there, and I've just been to I'm doing all right, mate. Just got back from Centre Parks, actually. I have a thing there again where, you know, on holiday everyone's topless, and you've seen the human body in its kind of purest form.
Yeah.
And everyone's got kids. I'm constantly doing maths. I wonder how old they are. How old are the kids? It's I did become a bit obsessed with aging around the 30 mark. You'd watch documentaries about a band, and they're young, and the next thing, they're old, and they're touring, and the wheel, and I just think, oh god, no one's safe from it. No one's safe.
Yeah, and then you're like, do I still get to? If you you feel at that point that whatever I'm doing and whatever I'm thinking, I want to be good at, I need to get good at it quick so that I'm cool enough that it's like, right, you can be on the front of the magazine, and you can be this and that and whatever. And then you do worry about all that, being like, oh, I'm missing the boat, maybe I'm... And then you start thinking, am I sad still trying to do this? And then...
Yeah.
But then you get out the other side of it, and you realise that all along, all that mattered was you just doing what you like doing, and actually, who wants to be on the front of a fucking... If what you're worried about is being on the front of a fucking NME...
Yeah, totally.
And also... The other good thing about getting to whatever age I might be approaching, doesn't need saying out loud, is that people that did smash it then and that you were jealous of, and that you think, oh, why wasn't I fucking Snow Patrol or whatever?
Yeah.
Right. They are now, they've gone through that and it's shat them out. And now, like in lockdown, for example, and I'm not saying that they're still, you know, this thing was still worthwhile, but those people are now, whatever age I am, no one needs to say what it is. I'm just saying whatever that age is. They are now making content and putting it on Instagram and having a YouTube channel, and they're also trying to get by making their content and doing what they're doing.
And they might be loving it. They might be enjoying that. Yeah. Yes. You just don't know. Like, I always think,
all right. Look, have they supported you too? Yeah. Have I? No. Is that, am I bothered about that? Well, who's to say in another 10 years they might be senile and not remember it anyway? So, like, who's going to win when they're senile?
Exactly. Yeah, agreed.
So, yeah, I mean, none of it.
Yes, they've got video footage to look back on and be. Yeah, they'll always have them.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, and their kids remember it and stuff. But it is that important anyway. Do
all
you
right,
know what I mean?
So, all them. All right, so that's is another scenario. All that photography that proves that they did do that. At the moment, it's all out there for free. Who's to say that in another 10 years, when he's 60 and he's starting to get senile and I'm still all right because I'm eating well and I look after myself and still doing music, people are downloading that. But then Shutterstock have bought all the rights to their photography, so now they can't even share it anyway. So now who's fucking won now? And I'm not angry. I'm not angry or jealous. I'm just saying, in the long run, if I keep eating pecan nuts and healthy fats... and keep releasing my music. I don't dye my hair. I don't have to. I don't have to. I'm not bothered if I'm getting older. So if that, I hope that's put your mind at rest.
Yeah, no, you're sounding a great place actually with it all.
Really, things are really happening for me now. I've got 116 Patreons.
Wow, that's not bad actually. That's good.
Yeah, I know.
We might have lost a few after the Russia chat early doors on this.
Yeah, all right. Some of them will go, but you get that if you're true to yourself.
Yeah, we're putting the stuff out we want to put out. But yeah, it's it's mad all that. You kind of you just blink and you're 10 years older. And I kind of I remember my dad turning the age that you're about to turn, which you don't need to say what it is.
Just gloss over it.
I bought him this this experience where it's like you've got it's in water, it's in the sea, and you've got jets on your feet.
Oh yeah.
And in my head, it's like, oh, it's my dad, he can do anything. And I bought him this thing, and he was just absolutely useless at it. And it was heartbreaking. And, like, he'd come out, he was exhausted. I was like, sorry, Dad.
You've hurt him.
Yeah, it hurt me. It's like...
Did he look like, when he was doing it, that he was... Was he going, no, I will. No, we'll do it,
He nailed it for about 4 seconds, and I managed to get a picture.
Yeah.
And... there's a glimmer like, oh, that's the old man there doing it. It was great actually, just like when Bruce Forsyth do a little bit of tap dancing every now and then. You think, that's the old Bruce. Do you know what I mean?
I have to say, I think I've mentioned this before somewhere back in another episode somewhere. An amazing piece of advice I had talking to a family therapist about 2 years ago. And I was talking about things I wanted to do to sort of connect to my son in a way, trying to we get on, but we've got quite a limited, what he uses me for is burgers, cinema, movie nights.
Yeah.
And when I try and expand that, it's quite hard to get something else to happen.
Right.
So, and certainly was at the time. And I was like, what I'd really like to do is get us to the point where we're sat down on a riverbank fishing and whatever, right? So, like, I don't really know what I'm doing, but maybe if I got someone who, a mate of mine who does do a bit of that, and we go to that, and then after that I'll know what to do, and then we do it and whatever. And he just put his hand up and went, just stop. He said, I advise you at this point in this relationship not to let your son see you being inept and then wound up at yourself. He was being deadly serious.
Wow.
I mean, he could have just gone, oh, that sounds nice. Fishing, that's a good one. Or you could go to Laser Quest or whatever. But he'd been speaking to me for about 5 weeks, and he'd already gleaned enough from my sort of nervous energy that he was like, please do not let this child see you struggling to open, like,
yeah, because of how, like, because how it would affect you rather than what he'd think. Did you think he
well
meant?
It's like he knew by that point that I was the sort of person that if I was like trying to open like a Pepper Army with my teeth and it won't open, I could end up throwing it on the ground and telling it to fuck off.
Yeah.
And kid doesn't need to see that.
Yeah, I think my dad is one of them, actually.
I mean, you know, I have been working on it, and I thought it was brilliant advice. It made me laugh a lot.
Because
he was a sweet sort of old, wise, professorial man.
Yeah.
Sort of just telling me not to do something that I thought would be fun. Yeah. It was quite... But
also with an accuracy, which was hurtful, but also, yeah.
But... the lessons that come along with the gradual aging are, they're all good. I think what it is I'm not wild about the speed at which I'm now going down the slide, but the commitment to learning more, as much about yourself, to self betterment, to understanding who you are, where you've been, what you want to give off, what you can learn to make you a better person to be around and a parent in the long run, and all of those things. When you start getting to the sort of what you're aspiring to isn't the Karate Kid anymore, it's fucking Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, it's right.
See what I mean?
Yeah, I'm always reminded of this when I watch the Olympics. And I can remember like rooting for like the plucky 16-year-old, he's missing his A levels to compete. You're like, oh, that's, go on, get behind him. And now I'm looking at the people, it's the last throw of the dice, their last Olympics, that they've had to convince the family to let them do one more, to stay in for one more Olympics. Yeah. Before you know it, you're rooting for the coaches. Before you know it, you're rooting for that guy that's putting medals around people's necks on the podium.
Yeah. Well, he's still there. God bless him. He's done all of them since 84, and he still is. His Panama hat's not fallen off once when he's run after that discus.
Yeah, that guy, yeah. He's been wheeled out in the opening ceremony. He's still doing it.
Oh, good. What are you at the moment? What were you aiming for? What's motivating you in like professionally? Like, because I know you've become a dad and all that, and so obviously the depth of what means what will have changed a bit. But in terms of, and I say this in a completely positive way, in the egoic kind of like, I'm gonna fucking, you know, like you said about do one video a week and blah, 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 and whatever. Yeah. Like, what is the sort of golden goose at the moment that you would like to get out of all this comedy stuff?
You know what? It sounds like I'm bloody, a therapy answer, but I just want to have nice days. I want to have nice days. I want to do a really good scripted thing. I want to do an hour of stand-up every year. And that's the only two things that I'm really...
That's an hour show that you work on, again, not incrementally adding up to 60 minutes over the 365 days.
Not a combined workload.
An hour show.
Yeah, they're the two things. And then beyond that, just kind of... But just to do it really well and to do it to a level that I'm proud of, you know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, just to be really good, that's all I'm really bothered about. Just to be really... Because you can kind of live with yourself then, if you're happy with something. You know, if you...
You can.
You do this treatment and no one wants to buy it, but you're convinced it's good. That feels better than doing a treatment you're not sure about and everyone going wild for it.
At 33, I agree with you. At 48, being completely honest, I now will have to... I'll have to really fall in love with that idea to want to go through the heartbreak of... spending weeks and weeks working on something for free.
Yeah.
What happens is they're not prejudices, but what happens is the wounds of how hard it is to get stuff made and all that.
Yeah.
And the reasons, the obstacles that come your way, the obstacles between art and you, they start to put you off a bit.
Totally. There's not a meeting you could offer me that I'd get excited about, even at this point.
Right, that's good to hear.
Because you know the first meeting you have with a producer or a commissioner, you're like, oh wow, this is massive. They're going to hand me a check and it's going to be. But it's, the more you go, you're like, oh yeah, this isn't going to be anything. But I'll just have a coffee and just.
But there was something that I used to say two things when I was less jaded, and it was. I used to say I've got a little bag of arrogance in my back pocket. You don't want to be turning into a twat, but almost like the ego does propel you forward a bit. We had this conversation with someone last week who was also saying they've stopped sort of like clambering, but now they miss the bit of them that was like, right, fucking get out there and show them.
Yeah.
And actually, I'd like to get back a little bit to that as well, because I think the other bit of it, thing that I used to always say to myself, and it's a nice way of saying it, And it's worked for a long time, and then suddenly it's like, oh, the batteries seem to have gone gammy in this thing.
Yeah.
But it was stay deluded.
Yeah, I like
and,
that.
And that used to make me laugh. It was almost like, oh, we all know that this is ridiculous. You're trying to like become, you want life to give you something that is a pretty big ask. Like, so if you say like a TV show or whatever, that is a pretty big ask out of life. Now, it is doable.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be put off with numbers, and that, because then, you know, who likes a quitter and why be negative and all that? So like, stay deluded used to really put a smile back on my face.
Yeah, that's
and I
nice.
Think I might start trying to remember it a bit, because I'm not deluded anymore. But actually, if someone said to me, "Oh, well done for retiring your delusion," I go, "Yeah, well, I'm not as egocentric as I used to be." It's like, what do you believe in now? Oh no, I'm just really cynical now. All right, so. How good does that feel? Well, actually, it feels a shitload worse.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously you don't want to look stupid. You know, like the old adage about insanity being, you know, everyone gets the wording of this wrong, but doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And if you just apply that to pitching TV shows, you could look at that and say, well, you're just being fucking stupid. But I don't think that's the case, because you've just got to...
Yeah, it's,
look,
it's
the
not...
anatomy of your life will change with your responsibilities as you get older. But what you've just got to find is, you know, which version of me staying deluded can I live with, and how and where do I pitch, and how accurately do you pitch something? And when you really care about an idea, I do believe you should follow it through and protect your true love of the things that you do creatively.
Yeah.
Like, totally. Really look after them.
And it's not total delusion. You know, you're not saying you're going to win Wimbledon.
No.
It's within the wheelhouse of the skills.
Felt like a bit of a dig, that, but go on.
I don't think you are, Nick. I'm going to put that on record, actually.
All right, well.
I'm happy to be proven wrong, but yeah, it's still within the wheelhouse of, you know, you've got... You know, all this experience in the bank, and it's delusion within. You've got to back yourself at some point, haven't you? Otherwise, you just wouldn't do it.
Now then, at this point, for some reason, the audio went funny, and we suddenly developed a small delay that made us sound like we were doing a two Ronnie sketch, talking over each other, and you know, the rhythm being one beat off. But Josh was talking about his live hour, so I don't want to not let you hear that. So please excuse the next sort of minute or two of weirdness, then it gets back on track. Thank you. I mean, you've just done a very successful show up in Edinburgh, haven't you? It went down really fucking well, didn't it?
Yeah, but you know what, this sums up, I can never get my head around this industry, so obviously... Spent a year crafting this hour of stand-up that I was really happy with. It got you know, dream Edinburgh, really. You know, reviews and audience numbers and all this. And then the first thing I got offered was a Comedy Central run-through where I had to down a pint of custard out of a pint glass.
Right, yeah.
I'm like, is this the prize for working on your art for a year?
Yeah,
perfect. So I did a freshers gig at the uni where my little brother is a fresher. Which is
right,
it's just an insane turn of events, really. So I was 50, so I was in year 11.
Did you smash
when
it?
No, there's no one. There's about there's about 40 people there. He wasn't one of them, actually. And then by the time I got on, there was about 12 people there, all very insecure freshers, not got their groups of friends yet. I'm talking about being married. Obviously, none of them are married. They've not got kids. I had absolutely nothing for them. Yeah. I think I just told them not to do drugs and to respect people's bodies, and got off, and that was it. But it was a real
That's funny.
very sobering experience. It also feels so wrong to be on a university campus during freshers. They just, you really feel...
Once you've left and you've grown up.
Yeah, but also then you are back. Like, who's... I'm not sure who's got the kind of... Who's higher status in that situation? That, you know, me or the audience also, there.
I like the idea that you, the significance of you mentioning, like, to finally get to do some comedy, the university that my brother's at, but he wasn't there.
Oh, no, he wanted no part of it. But I did threaten to
I think
say
there is a little bit of a lag, by the way.
Yeah, I think there is. I don't know why that's coming. That hasn't been throughout.
No. Well, that's good. It's going to slightly throw us a bit. We had good momentum there, but maybe we should use it comedically to try and see if we can riff a sort of two Ronnie sketch where we say all the wrong things in a funny order.
We're one behind.
I'll leave you space. Let's leave each other space. We'll try and get to the end of this episode. I don't know how to fix lag. Well, let me just press pause a minute. Hang on. We had a little stop there because the sound went weird on us, but we're back for the last few minutes.
I think it's Russia. Russia have bugged the podcast.
Yeah, I think there's a very good chance. I mean, who owns Google Chrome, really?
I mean, imagine them trying to decide for this. They'd be like, these two are no threat to us. We could literally send these guys all the intelligence and they would not have an impact on our effort.
Yeah. The Russian Alan Turing sort of decoded it and given us a lag so that we can't communicate effectively. So, what else should we talk about, right? So, like, just to finish the point we were making, it's so hard to not sound really fucking patronising, but as we're in a similar game, and we actually worked together earlier this year, and I really enjoyed being in the room with everyone, and then I didn't think about it till after, but me and Spencer's probably a bit younger than me, but I was a bit older than some of the others, and so it's nice working with people who are fucking up for it and hungry and keen, because all my mates who I talk to who write and whatever, it's quite weary a lot of the time.
I worked with, Phil Kerr?
Yes.
I worked with Phil Kerr the other week. He's a good guy, and he's like... He's been at it for years. Just proper geezer, isn't he? You don't really expect to meet people like that in this world, but he's I really liked him.
Yeah, it's still a lovely thing to be part of, and all the more so when you do get hired for something where there's lots of different people in a room and haven't got loads in common, but then what you get in common is finding stuff to all laugh at. It's great.
Yeah, it's wicked.
Do you know when... Because we both wrote on the same show, and that was... Do you know the title of it is? Isn't it Deepfake Neighbour Wars?
Yeah, I believe so. That's what it was at the time. Anyway, that was the working title when we were there.
And I haven't had an update that recently, but while they were editing it, I was told it was looking good, and that should be, I'm assuming it'll be out fairly soon.
Yeah, I feel like November. I heard November, but I don't know. I don't know where I've plucked that from. But I had a couple of pictures because it's this deepfake technology stuff. It's wicked. It looks great.
Yeah. I think I've mentioned it before. The concept is basically like a Channel 5 documentary about neighbour wars that you would see around tea time on any sort of self-respecting cheap as chips channel, but with deepfake technology, meaning that the neighbours are very famous, globally recognisable celebrities, but arguing about, like who's parked to skip outside their house or having a passive aggressive argument about parking. What was the basic nature of your story again?
Mine was
a really good one, yours.
Yeah, mine was Jake Paul's racing pigeons kept shitting on Adele's mechanical awning.
That was it, yeah.
Yeah.
And mine was Jay-Z and Olivia Colman have got a cat that they dote on, but the cat is being tempted into what's he called? Loki.
Tom Holland.
Tom. What's he called? The guy who plays Loki. Oh, the posh actor who's a bit smarmy. He was in. He was in that thing. He was in. Anyway, you know, people listening will know who I mean.
Yeah, they'll be shouting at the thing.
Yeah, there's a really good shot that it was just written in as a stage direction, but David, the producer, sent me a picture of it. I said, I want there to be a picture on the wall where people get a portrait at a local sort of photo gallery of them holding their kid, but they're sort of topless from the so it's like everyone's got bare shoulders. So it was like Jay-Z and Olivia Colman with a cat in the middle, but like with bare shoulders. And he sent me a picture of that. It was fucking brilliant. It looked like something you'd get in B&Q.
These producers, they can just make things happen, can't they? They're basically like wish makers.
I think that's the best bit of the job.
Yeah.
Apart from the bit where you're with people and you have a laugh.
Yeah.
Or you get to say, I can't believe it. I've actually got money in the bank that's just come from silly things that I've thought of. The actualization. I mean, obviously, there's the situation that you will learn as you go. You know, the more telly you do, there's times where it's a strange feeling where you watch your baby be turned into something you don't recognize. But anything that's even remotely close to what you meant, it's a really amazing thing to see, like someone just sort of like from an art department. Like, I remember we wrote a sketch once for Armstrong and Miller where a bloke turned into a fly. And so we were leaning into just like the movie The Fly, but now that's like a problem someone has to solve. And the joke was that it was about having a flatmate who, when you say you've had a bad day, they go, yeah, because it's like me, and they talk about themselves, right? And so to accentuate that idea, we had, like, I think it was Ben Miller who was the person turning into the fly. It was effectively like American Werewolf in London, but where the friend of the person who's now becoming a monster is just so up themselves that they don't even notice what's happening in front of them. But the day we went to see that being filmed, and that had to be done in different stages of like horror makeup, and how many hours that took, and how cool it was to see the skills of those people and all that, like being in a studio. Yeah, you're right.
And that's what they want. That they want stuff like that. I always feel bad as a stand-up when you go to these venues and there's a technician there who's got like cargo trousers on and a pencil beyond the ear, and he's like, "I just need a microphone, mate."
A bottle of plastic water?
Yeah. So and he's just gutted. He just think, "Oh, he really wanted
give me something."
He wanted pyrotechnics and cues and stuff, and I'm just like, "Did I just turn the lights up and down?" And he's like, oh, especially in Edinburgh when he's doing that for 28 nights in a row.
Right, yeah, fair enough, yeah. I recently watched both of the Stuart Lee things that are on iPlayer that were from, I think, maybe they're not that recent, but they're from the last couple of years. And obviously he is stripped down, kind of proper, like, just microphone comedian. But he very cleverly used his setting, at least for an end gag. I don't want to ruin it in case anyone goes and watches it. What were they called? The two specials he did last.
Was it the content provider one?
Oh, it was after that. Stuart Lee specials BBC. Hang on. Stuart Lee specials. I'm shamelessly researching as I write. They are called Snowflake and Tornado.
Okay.
And his set dressing for the TV specials is pretty good, but he doesn't really reference it. It's just there. But I like when that happens and then you can get a good ending out of it, or at least get a bit out of it, or a riff, or something that reveals itself to be not insignificant, that looks it was insignificant. I love that.
Yeah, what's that thing called?
Just saying, pep it up a bit.
Yeah, just put a bit of effort in, isn't it?
I've got nothing against your jeans and your T-shirt, but just, you know, I've seen you in them too many times now.
Yeah, do something.
Actually, what do you wear on stage? I very rudely haven't seen you on stage.
I actually developed a bit of a uniform, actually. It's just you know, like Steve Jobs only wears one thing, so it's one less decision for him to make. I've just started wearing a navy button-up jacket.
Yeah, oh yes, very good.
And it's just kind of, and then just black jeans and trainers, and I think I'll just do that forever now.
Yeah,
it's not
craft,
really,
that says craft beer and books. So I think you
it
are.
It does, yeah, it does. But
the modern reconstructed version of the the people that turned my head all those years ago.
Yeah, but it's also not too much. It's not, you know, it's not a big, I'm not wearing a poncho.
Not a cravat.
Yeah.
A poncho.
I'm not going to put gigging in a poncho. Yeah, and a satchel.
Oh, God, that's funny. Yeah. When are you next? What, like, dates have you got coming up? Are you on tour?
Yeah, well, my tour starts in February.
Wow.
Which is a show I've done just in Edinburgh, so I have to kind of relearn that, and now I'm just doing
Tell us the name of the tour.
It's called Sausage, Egg, Josh Pugh, Chips and Beans.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's good. But I might just add items every year.
Yeah.
So I might do two sausage, egg, Josh Pugh. I don't know what I'll do, but...
Yeah,
so that's in February. So I'm just doing club gigs and working on new stuff and just trying to enjoy it and have fun with it. It's you sort of put such a big project, Edinburgh, to you know, the months after can be a bit, you can feel a bit flat creatively. Well, I can anyway.
I've heard that, and I've only done stuff up there once, but it wasn't just creatively flat. I was just like questioning everything about who I was.
Yeah, so I've just kind of been making notes on my phone, and I'll just try and get out some new material gigs and try and get something to cook in, you know.
Yeah, I feel like when I came back from Edinburgh, it was like, what have you learned? It was like, I like the slight difference in the taste of Scottish chips.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Like a slightly different oil or something. I don't know what it is, but I would definitely go back for that.
Yeah. Or
look, and I like seeing all the other people doing the same thing I do and just being really proud of everyone.
Yeah.
But I now feel as if maybe I'll just stay under this duvet for 2 months. I went a bit funny after that, but I still love...
It's just a massive thing. It's a massive thing to put yourself through, really. I think... We especially from the backgrounds we're from, you can feel a bit soft for saying it's hard, you know, you're just going and doing a show every day, but it is.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. You do put yourself through it, definitely.
Yeah, it's grueling. Definitely.
So yeah.
So when are you in the very near future, is there anything I could come and watch you doing?
I'm doing Clapham Grand at the weekend.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm doing just on a club gig, but I'm gonna do some work in progress stuff in London, I think.
Right,
soon.
Well, let's keep chatting. I don't want to flirt with you too much, but I'll send you a message and see if we can meet up for a brew or a beer. Are you in London a bit, or are you mainly...
Quite a lot, mate, actually, yeah, quite a lot. Yeah. So I've got your number now, actually. Okay, yeah. So I'll reach out to you.
Yeah, all right. Or I'll reach out to you more.
Yeah, yeah. Or you reach back.
Was that you saying, back off, mate.
Don't call me. We'll call you.
No, I've got your number, so you don't need to.
Yeah. Don't keep emailing. But yeah.
Yeah. No. Do send the emails because Jill reads those, but just less with the phone because it's just getting a bit.
Yeah.
It's just getting a bit. I don't mind it. You know, it's just like after 11 o'clock feels quite.
Yeah.
Especially if you're like, are you there? Did you get my last message?
It's invasive.
It's invasive.
Yeah.
We've just got a lot on, and we have got a young baby, so just bear in mind, you know, because with the missus, it's not me, the missus gets upset, but
we are on holiday, and you do know we're on holiday, so don't keep.
Yeah. And also, driving to Coventry and saying, actually, I'm around the corner now.
Yeah, just in town.
You went a bit funny about that one, didn't you?
It was.
And I said, it's only an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because you said in that writing room, yeah, come up to Coventry, yeah, you should come up for a pint, actually. And I went, well, I have, haven't I?
Yeah.
And you were like, yeah, but probably a bit of notice, actually. Yeah. And I've gone, well, what's the fucking rush? It's 6 o'clock. Like, can you not come out at 8?
Yeah, exactly.
And it was a bit frosty, that.
Yeah. I can't at the minute. And then not, why? Just.
Because she tells you what to do.
She's got in your head again, ain't she? You were saying.
I've actually just watched. Have you ever watched Saxondale with Steve Coogan?
Yeah, brilliant.
I've just watched the episode where his old sort of like roadie mate comes and overstays his welcome, and it's like, yeah, come on, then we'll have a doobie and then go for a pint, and he sort of he's acting like he definitely can, but you can see that quite clearly that, you know, you've got to respect someone else when you live with them and all that. But there is a funny thing about men where there's a real pride about what they're allowed and not allowed to do.
Yeah, totally.
As if they should have a God-given right to do what they want all the time, instead of it like actually mattering, like who else lives in your life.
So just being respectful.
Mm. And anyway, so an old loner like me whose marriages are just like crumbled fucking bits in an attic somewhere, we sort of lean into that when we're trying to make ourselves feel better by making younger people who are still basically being respectful family yeah. life is, oh, you're still doing all that, are you?
Yeah,
feminism.
Yeah, but then the generation, my generation's is, you've changed. Oh, the old Josh would have done it. The old Josh would
be out.
Don't
ever let them get to you, mate, these mates, because I tell you now, the years, I did spend some years going, oh, what let happen to me here? Oh, God, I felt really weird in my own skin that I was going on dad's drinks and stuff like that. Like, what the fuck is this? And now my kids got older, and now I'm wishing I was going for dad's drinks and that my kid was still that age and there were still kids' parties and stuff.
Yeah, interesting. That's good to know, actually.
So you listen to your old Uncle Ben Kenobi, mate.
Yeah, that's good to know, you know.
Well, listen, man, I'd like to think this is just only the beginning. If you liked it and you want to come back on, it would be good to keep chatting. I will hit you up slightly too keenly, and I'd love to come and see some stuff and have a chat with you. And we should. It'd be nice to talk about ideas as well.
Yeah, wicked, man. I'd love that.
Funny
as
fuck, man. And
yeah, it's great.
I'll tell you something. I don't know whether there's already stuff happening, but the character that you do, please. How do people find you on Instagram?
It's Josh Pugh Comic on everything.
Pugh being P-U-G-H, right?
You got it.
Go and have a look. It's fucking funny as fuck. And I think I will try and catch some audio and put it on the intro to this show anyway. So
yeah, awesome.
I'll big you up anyway. But yeah, I'd love to be at least have a conversation about
stuff.
Yeah,
we'll have a chat, mate, definitely. Thanks so much. Thanks for having
me. Awesome. Fucking great. That was a really fun chat, man.
Yeah, thank you, Nico. I've got a chicken Kiev downstairs, mate.
All right. All right, mate. You go and do what you got to do. You be with your kids, son.
Yeah, nice one, pal. Speak to you soon.
Yeah, all right, mate. See you.
Thank you, mate. Bye,
mate. Bye. Absolutely cracking, lad. Absolutely cracking. Reminds me of my younger self, but more organised and actually putting his money where his mouth with and just better than me. That's the end of that episode. Goodbye. Remember, if you love the show in a deep and probably unhealthy way, you can help support it on an ongoing and stalky basis on patreon.com/stupidheartsclub. Your choice. See you soon, you internet weirdos. I'm one.